to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome to tonight's live installment of the award-winning political cesspool radio program. I am your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday, October 9th, as we broadcast to you on the Liberty News Radio Network and to the Liberty News Radio Network's AM/FM affiliate stations across the country, including our flagship station, AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis. Now, normally I would start the show by telling you I'm coming to you live from AM 1380, but to tell you that tonight would be a lie. This is going to really push the extent of our technological capabilities tonight. Everything is out of control this evening in the political cesspool, in a good way. Keith Alexander is out of town on a business trip. I'm out of town at a separate location doing videos for the big political cesspool video project. Bill Rowland's back at home in studio in Memphis, and he joins me on the line right now. I'm calling from a hotel room where my wife and daughter are sitting over here making all sorts of noises. So this is live radio at its finest. This is the political cesspool really uncensored. We don't know how it's going to go tonight. Keith Alexander may or may not call in if his business breaks later on in the show. God only knows for sure. We don't know what we're going to bring to your attention tonight, but it will be great radio. Right, Bill?
Absolutely, James. Absolutely. It will be great radio. And as you say, we're all in different locations right now, sort of like the James Gang breaking up and heading in all directions, I suppose.
Good analogy.
As always, we're going to be covering a lot of topics, and we're going to be covering the news, and we're going to be covering what's of interest to our audience, and we will certainly strive to satisfy.
Normally, we're all there together in the posh studios of 1380. Tonight, I'm in a hotel room with a six-month-old. Keith is on safari, and then now you, Bill, trying to man the fort. It's going to be exciting tonight. I think everyone's in for a treat one way or the other. Continue a little bit on what I mentioned a moment ago. I am out of town tonight doing a few of the very first political cesspool video shoots. I just had an opportunity to sit down and hammer one out with Richard Spencer, who is, of course, the editor of Alternative Right magazine. Richard just gave an address to a very prestigious university, and I caught up with him, and he will be joining us a little bit later this hour, in fact, just for a few minutes to recap what happened. And so we're going to just tease you with that and let Richard Spencer come on and give you the details. Of course, Richard formerly served as editor of the American Conservative magazine as well as Taki's magazine, so Richard Spencer should be no stranger to the political cesspool audience. He has been on the show a couple of times and has favorably reviewed my book and had me on his program. So Richard's a good guy. We like Richard, and we're going to hear more about his exploits in just a moment. But Bill, I'm very excited about the political cesspool video project. Just to advance word of this, we're going to be having our first videos posted to our website at thepoliticalcesspool.org a little bit later this week. And as you know, Bill, there's a few things we want to do in these videos. We think they're going to be a treat for the fans, first of all. And rather than just listening to us on the radio or reading what we have to say, they're going to be able to see us in live action. And this one we're going to have them cover no matter how they prefer to receive their political cesspool news. And we're going to be producing different kinds of videos here at TPC. They're all going to be short videos, usually no longer than 5 minutes each. And we're going to feature some of the following ideas. Some of us, when we're actually home and in studio, us giving behind-the-scenes tours of our studio, showing what it's like when we interact with one another during the commercial breaks. We're going to be updating on video some of the biggest stories that we're covering each week on the show. We're going to better illustrate that which we speak of on the air with live tours of the city of Memphis, one-on-one video interviews featuring some of our favorite guests. Obviously, that's what I'm doing here with Richard Spencer tonight, and an all-access pass to some of our public appearances, our staff engaged in various scenarios. Bill, there's the tip of the iceberg. We're just beginning to cultivate this project. It has a lot of potential, and I know you're going to be starring in some of these videos, just as you've starred as co-host on this show for 6 years now. So another way for us to increase and expand our own celebrity, Bill, and that's always a good thing.
Putting a face to the voice, I guess, is going to be an advantage, in that Well, you got to put a face with a voice. I mean, come on. You're going to get to see us in person, which may cost us some audience share. We don't know yet. we're going to give it a shot. And certainly, I would ask our audience to be patient with us and remember that it's going to be a work in the process for a while.
Whatever the first video looks like, I promise we'll do better. I promise we'll improve. This is new. But obviously, the main goal here is to put these videos not only up on our own blog for our own fan base, but to put them out to YouTube and to use that as a way to drive traffic back to our radio program, which is, of course, the anchor to everything we do here, and drive traffic to our website from these social networking and video sharing sites and bring new listeners to the Political Cesspool. And we think that video has the capability to do that. So Bill Rowland, of course, as always, my partner in anything and everything that we do here at the Cesspool, and I'm looking forward to his input and appearances in these videos, and I know we've got some good ideas for when I get back to Memphis, and it's exciting stuff, folks. It's really going to be good, I think, so stay tuned to thepoliticalcesspool.org as the debut of these videos is right around the corner this week, in fact, so stay tuned. Now, that being said, and all announcements out of the way, Bill, we do have a big show tonight. We're going to have a couple of guests, and we're going to be providing you with an update on the big Rachel Maddow stink. Now, Bill Rowland was not on the show last week, and I've only spoken to Bill briefly about this. It's been a very busy week for both of us, and we're going to hear what Bill makes of the latest splash of national publicity for our radio program here. We're going to get that as we head into the next segment, just a moment from now. So, again, folks, if you're just tuning in, call your friends. This is going to be very much an experimental broadcast of the Cesspool tonight, and we hope that we don't come out looking like rank amateurs. I feel very naked, Bill, not being at WLRM tonight. I just don't know how it's going to go. How's everything going back home, though?
We're definitely treading water, or treading the airwaves, however you want to put it. We're squirming in the parachute, but I think that if we pull everything off, we're going to have some very interesting guests. This is going to be sort of a surprise guest night, except for, of course, Richard Spencer, who we've already announced. But just in brief, of course, he made a speech at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, and on behalf of Western Civilization, I think it was sponsored by Youth for Western Civilization, and he's going to tell us what happened up there. And I read some notes on it, pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah, he's actually coming up in just a minute, so we're going to talk to him more about that. But front page here in the newspaper, so this is going to be something that I think folks will want to hear. Oh, by the way, it's 6 months old, so you would think that all the reviews have now come in. But American Renaissance Magazine, the great scientific journal edited by our very good friend Jared Taylor, they have just published their review, Bill, of Racism Schmacism, Better Late Than Never, and it was a great one. Got a link to that at our website, since we're still in the opening segment here. Check it out at thepoliticalcesspool.org. I might talk more about that a little later in the show. You never know. We'll be back right after this. Just getting started, everybody. Stay
tuned. Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby. Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to this very experimental broadcast of the Political Cesspool radio program. You know, thank God for the marvels of modern technology. We'd not be even able to come to you tonight. We've got the production staff in Memphis, our network support crew in Utah, and we're at all points of call throughout the globe. Keith's somewhere, I'm somewhere else, and Bill's at home. So I don't know. I don't know how it works, but I'm glad the white man invented it, that's for sure. Now, Bill, as you know, the Political Cesspool has been a fixture in both national and international news coverage this summer. You know, you go back years and you start counting the big hits that we've had, and it's almost gotten to the point where they are too numerous to remember them all. In fact, just this summer has brought so much publicity to the show because of our abilities to articulate these ideas in a very polished and unapologetic way, that we have become certainly a fixture. And the latest example of that would be, of course, last week. We talked about it last week, so I'm not going to recap it all, but I will give you an update that Rachel Maddow, of course, attacked the political cesspool on her MSNBC television program last week. And since then, and I'm not kidding when I say this, that we really have the best audience in the world. I've been on a lot of other radio and television programs, and I don't think anyone has the kind of responsive and dedicated audience that the political cesspool has. I mean that. When we need support, our audience is always there. When it's time to go to battle, they always rally. That's something we never lose sight of when we're in the studio fighting on their behalf. And the latest phenomenal example, Bill, of political cesspool listener support comes in the form that hundreds, yeah, I am not exaggerating, hundreds of emails have been sent in to MSNBC in hopes that Rachel Maddow will answer my challenge for a debate. Fans of the Political Cesspool radio program always rise to the occasion. Can the same be said for hypocritical MSNBC television personalities? You know, she has made a name for herself, Bill, for ridiculing those who she wants to debate on her program, but for whatever reason or another, they don't appear. Now, it would be one thing if we just, out of the clear blue, started an email campaign demanding that she have us on our show, or that she come on this show, or that we be on her show. But, you know, she thought enough of our work to denounce us on the air, so obviously we're newsworthy. And my question to her was, why talk about us when you can talk with us? And apparently that's a question that hundreds of people in our audience share, because I have been carbon copied to at least 100 emails sent to her on our behalf, and I'm sure that there were more than that that people didn't take the time to copy me to. So a lot of people wanting to know, Bill, will Rachel Maddow answer the challenge of the political cesspool, and what do you think of the fact that this is just another example of us making news? We're newsmakers.
James, Rachel Maddow, if she has any sense at all, would never agree to debate you or any other member of the cesspool staff, because what Rachel Maddow wants is to simply have the ability to render decrees on everyone else and render judgments without the inconvenience of a debate or the inconvenience of a dispute or a contrary opinion. And this is very much a part of the national news media attitude towards ordinary Americans or the people who disagree with their culturally Bolshevik view of the world. Of course, Maddow's not going to do that, because she knows perfectly well her own weakness would be exposed. And she's not going to expose a weakness. She's going to pretend that her opinion is so righteous and so correct and so powerful that it would just be a waste of her time to go up against somebody from the political cesspool. It would be like trying to argue with a barking dog. I mean, that's her view. That's her, at least, going to be her public stance. It's the old thing of, I'm not going to stoop. It's the stoop factor. Anyone with a superior attitude who actually has a sense of inferiority, a sense of vulnerability, is going to say, I'm not going to stoop to debate those racist bigots, because I know that I'm right, and I have the highest point of authority at MSNBC, because I'm this powerful Jewish lesbian, and my opinions are the only ones that matter. We have the upper hand in all media situations. So that's going to be Rachel Maddow's stand, is that she's simply too good and too powerful and too important to stoop to the level of actually defending her opinion against somebody from the political cesspool.
Well, see, but that's the thing, though. That's my point exactly. Now, she could perhaps hold that position if she hadn't made us an item of topic on her program. You know, by her infusing us into her own monologue, then therefore, obviously, we're newsworthy enough for her to mention. I mean, she certainly fears our capability to get the message out enough to take issue with us on our show. And of course, I've received quite a few comments from people who watched that episode, and they make the point, very accurately so, that her argument, if you want to call it one, was just completely emotionally based. She absolutely lost control, flailing arms, bug-eyed, quivering voice, and she comes at us with all the old names, white supremacist, racist.
Well, of course, because all they have is a string of epithets and a string of accusations, unfounded, of course, but nevertheless, that's what they fall back on, is this old superstitious view that they don't have to defend any of their positions, that their positions have been established by the fact that they have the power to express them. They base the legitimacy of their opinions on the power to express them. And that is, of course, a megalomaniacal view of the world. It's quite correct that they have the mentality of North Korean dictators and North Korean authoritarian Marxists. That because they have the power to say something, that makes it right.
Well, Bill, no doubt she's seen me in action on CNN, so she knows what's going to happen to her if she has me on. But, honestly, a five-year-old could probably out-debate her because, one of the first things I would ask her would be, well, it's okay for you to openly support other lesbians. Why can't we support our own family in issues? And why is it only racist for white people to show love and support for their ideas and for their history and culture and go from there? I got a great email here. I'll read one. And it says this, and this is just a perfect example of the dozens and dozens of emails I've received similar in nature. To whom it may concern, this comes from a political cesspool fan in Glenview, Illinois. I just happened to be watching the Rachel Maddow show. I couldn't help but notice the host's hypocrisy. She criticized Christine O'Donnell for ignoring invitations to appear on our show. Ironically, she refuses to debate James Edwards, host of the political cesspool, after the slander she committed against him on her own show. She feels free to mock those who ignore her calls for interviews and debates, despite being guilty of the exact same thing herself. It would be terribly cowardly for her to criticize someone on national television, as she did us, Bill, and then ignore their challenge to a debate, especially after being given an opportunity to choose the venue. So, she's received hundreds of emails just like that. I don't know if the next 100 will have any effect whatsoever, but if you want to find out, folks, email her at rachel@msnbc.com. I don't expect a reply, but Bill, the bigger question is, as we continue to move forward with this show, our seventh year of broadcasting right around the corner, the Political Cesspool was founded on October 26th, 2004, so I guess we will officially be 6 years old this October 26th, but heading into what will be our seventh year. What does this mean for the show going forward, Bill, as we continue to pile up the mainstream either celebrity or notoriety, depending on your persuasion, but as the cesspool continues to move forward with this message and we get another shot in the arm like this, how do you react to that?
Obviously, don't mess with success. The reason we have an audience at all is because we have been telling the truth, because we have been expressing opinions that many, many people hold inside and are afraid to express or have been afraid to even think about. And all of a sudden, here is this loudspeaker coming out of Memphis and Ellington saying, hey, what you thought is right.
Bill, hang on. I hear music in my ear, so we got to take a break. I do know that much. We'll be back right after this. Thank you.
We've been working hard, babe. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll free at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back, everybody, to the award-winning political cesspool radio program. James Edwards and Bill Rowland hosting with you this first hour. And I have in my hands at this very moment a copy of a Nashville area newspaper. And very front page, above the fold, it reads in bold letters, "Tempers Flare at Anti-Diversity Speech Made by Richard Spencer." The subtitle reads, "Spencer says genetics account for race achievement gap." I'll read quickly to you the first paragraph. Whoever wrote the story is obviously going to be fired. They identified Richard as a conservative speaker rather than a neo-Nazi or a white supremacist or a racist or any of the ADL-approved adjectives. But it says, Conservative Speaker Richard Spencer presented his case against affirmative action policies to Vanderbilt students last night in Furman Hall. I would say the biggest lie at the heart of our society is affirmative action and civil rights enforcement legislation, Spencer said. Affirmative action is anti-white discrimination, period. And joining me now, as promised, is the one and only Richard Spencer, editor of AlternativeRight.com. Richard, you didn't pull any punches there at Vanderbilt, did you?
No, I didn't. But it might sound like I face some of these horrible SDS leftists, and they never let me talk, or they screamed at me, or they threw things at me, or lit fires, or something like that. But although that might have been interesting, it wasn't like that. I actually believe that in some ways a lot of these people are very happy to hear someone who doesn't pull any punches and who gives them the straight dope or whatever you want to call it and doesn't hide behind the kind of post-Marxian academic discourse that they're treated to in their classrooms and who really says something that's bold and true.
Well, Richard's work at AlternativeRight.com is certainly something that regular listeners to this program are familiar with. It's always encouraging when you see men like Richard take that message, that unadulterated message, that message that hasn't been diluted, and share it with just as much tenacity in a live public setting. And that's what he did at a very prestigious forum, Vanderbilt University, an Ivy League school if the South ever had one. And he took the message and told the truth in love. And Richard, as we were talking about earlier, we don't know what seeds were planted there and what fruit it might bear even years down the road.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't think it was probably 95% of the crowd was against me and fairly hostile. We had about an hour of Q&A, and I certainly answered everyone's question, but. Why I do it is you think, I'm not going to convince most of those people. Sure, they're always going to be our enemies. But I've always thought of this as a metaphor of you put out some bait, you put out some fish hooks, because, we want to capture the hearts and minds of a new elite, new people who aren't going to fall for all these old lies that the establishment has been giving them at least since 1945, and we really want we want to catch those people. And so if there's one person who knows kind of in his gut that something's horribly wrong with the system he lives under is based on lies, and he's never really heard someone articulate it, and certainly if I'm able to reach just one person in that room like that, who's going to be, part of this rising new elite who aren't stuck in all these horrible paradigms, then the trip is well worth it.
As I said, Bill, Richard probably gave those students more truth in an hour and a half heard in their studies over the course of a four-year education at Vanderbilt. But, Bill, I know this was something that you were quite excited to read about, too, the fact that he was able to deliver a speech at Vanderbilt. So what do you make of it?
Well, it was good news. It's good news to hear that you can speak at a university without being either run off stage or have the meeting so badly disrupted it's shut down. Richard, do you feel that the audience there may have been staged or orchestrated for this event? Particularly, we know that the leftists do have one talent, and that is being able to fill a room full of leftists. Do you feel that maybe some of these student groups got together and decided to pack the house?
Maybe. I mean, I'm not against them doing that. I mean, I would dislike it quite a bit if the left had some conspiracy to ignore me. If they're going to send, I mean, we had probably 150 to 200 people there. At this lecture, so I'm perfectly happy to speak to everyone. So, but I think most people there were genuinely interested in the subject. It's something that affects them. I mean, affirmative action, it's just like people want to think about this as, oh, affirmative action is about that one girl whose SAT score wasn't high enough and she got in anyway because she's black or whatever. Or, oh, it's a tiebreaker that we use between two candidates with equal qualifications or something like that. This is so far from being true. It's ridiculous. I mean, affirmative action is a massive industry, an industry that commands hundreds of billions of dollars. And you can see that this is something that's much bigger than the way it's portrayed. It's much bigger than just something of that poor white person didn't get into the school he wanted to. This is about lowering standards across the board in a way that affects white people, certainly affects black people as well, affects everyone. This is a way of funneling money into things that certain administrators want to see, certain government, you know, bureaucrats and politicians want to see. This is a way of using a university not as a place of higher learning, which they are not, just basically using a university as a kind of excuse to construct some universal society that administrators and professors want to see. So this is a major thing. This is something that affects everyone's life.
Richard, that's a good point, and I think it was said earlier that hundreds of millions of dollars has been spent to raise the black IQ, to raise the achievement gap, in other words.
Right.
And it's obviously an impossible task. It'll never be done. But what can be done is that they can lower the standards of education to such a point that it brings our people down, and by doing so would level the gap in achievement. So I'm sure this was something that you addressed there from the podium as well. And so, folks, you know, I know Richard's going to be putting up an article about this at his website. We'll have we'll carry word of it when I get back home at thepoliticalcesspool.org, and we'll talk with Richard more about it in the future, I'm sure. But, Richard, I know our time together is limited this evening, so I want to quickly shift gears and ask you about a very important conference that you're going to be hosting coming up in Baltimore, Maryland, just a couple of weeks from now. What information can you give us about that?
Yes, well, it's the H.L. Mencken Club Conference. It's our third annual conference, and it's going to take place on October 22nd and 23rd in Baltimore, Maryland. And if anyone is interested, I would direct them to hlmenckenclub.org, or certainly just put in, say, my name and H.L. Mencken Club or something like that into Google, and I'm sure that will be the first thing that comes up. And there they can purchase a ticket. They can get a hotel reservation if they'd like to spend time in Baltimore and see who's on it. And we really have a special program. It's a who's who of who's who of thought criminals. I mean that in a good way. You know, John Derbyshire, who's really, you know, one of the few people in the mainstream conservative movement, whom I think we all respect. I mean, he has spoken a lot of truth, and he's been fearless. He's going to be there talking about PC. The whole conference is based on it's looking at a kind of genealogy of political correctness. You know, what is this thing, this civic religion that dominates society? Where did it come from? How do we fight it? So on and so forth. Peter Brimelow, who's a you know, great hero of mine and a friend. He'll be there. He'll be talking about neo-socialism in the sense of, you know, you hear a lot of people worry, you know, Glenn Beck or something, we're going socialist and things like that. And, you know, that is true in many ways. But this is not a kind of socialism, the Soviet Union, of the state owning all property and controlling the economy that way. This is a new kind of socialism that it gets at, you know, in some ways of what I was speaking of the other night. This is socialism based on forcing racial equality. This is a socialism based on destroying rights of free association. This is socialism based on funneling money this way and that in order to achieve some desired outcome of a universal, multiracial, polyglot society that a few people in Washington and New York City have dreamed up and want to see happen. So, you know, I think that's going to be a blockbuster. Other people, you know, Paul Godfrey, you've had him on the show numerous times. You know, he'll be giving actually two talks, and, you know, a number of other people, James Cowell, I'll be giving a talk. You know, Robert Weisberg will be talking about that.
Richard, hold on right there.
I'm forgetting people, but it's going to be a...
Hold on right there, Richard. Just pause 1 second. I hear music. We got to take a break. I want to wrap this up with you on the other side.
We got to get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. We held Richard Spencer over for just one more minute to recap that which he was making mention of just before the break. I tell you, Richard Spencer's a busy guy. He really wears a lot of hats and draws quite a bit of water in this movement of ours. He is, in addition to being the editor of Alternative Right magazine, alternativeright.com, be sure to check it out. He's also the former editor of the American Conservative magazine and Talkies magazine. In addition to being a featured speaker at Vanderbilt University, he's organizing meetings such as this in Baltimore, Maryland, just 13 days from today, the weekend of October 22nd and the 23rd, the H.L. Mencken Club will reconvene, and you're going to hear great speakers, that's for sure, members of the fraternity of political cesspool guests that will be there include John Darbyshire, Peter Brimelow, Paul Godfrey. They've all appeared. Great guests, great friends of ours. And, of course, Richard Spencer will be there. So people who tune into our program will certainly be in the presence of fine company. And really, Richard, that is the ultimate draw of any conference of this nature. You're going to get reinforced with some good talk. You're going to exchange some ideas, but it's really the fellowship and the camaraderie that you share at these things that make the trips truly worthwhile. And I know there's going to be great fellowship to be had in Baltimore. So recap that contact info one more time.
Oh, yeah. Just say that. Absolutely. I think one of the great things about meeting together as a fellowship in this sense that, you know, I am not alone. There are other people who are fighting the fight I'm fighting. There are other people who believe in what I believe and so on and so forth. Anyway, it's at October 22nd. It's in Baltimore, Maryland. It's the H.L. Mencken Club, third annual meeting. If you want more information, go to hlmenckenclub.org. Or if you just Google that and maybe throw in my name or something like that, I'm sure that will be the first Google hit, and there at the website you can do everything. Sign up, make, you know, hotel reservations, check out the speakers, listen to a podcast of former speakers, so on and so forth. So hlmakingclub.org.
And I think everybody there has reviewed my book, so my God, please go visit them. Help them out. Peter Brimelow,
right,
Paul,
yeah.
Gottfried, Richard Spencer.
Steve Saylor's going to come. You know, a lot of people are fans of his. Craig Boddicker, the director of Conversation About Race.
Sure.
I mean, the list goes on. I mean, it's just going to be a fantastic weekend. You can
well, it's great stuff. We wouldn't promote it on this program if it wasn't, and Richard is certainly well-deserving of your support, as is the H.L. Mencken Club and all of those great speakers that Richard mentioned. Now, I will tell you this in parting. We are going to be working to have Richard Spencer and Paul Godfrey on, Dr. Godfrey, back on the program next week to talk about this in a little greater detail, and perhaps we'll explore other topics too. Richard, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you're on the road tonight, as we all are, to share with our audience a word about the meeting forthcoming and the meeting you had at Vanderbilt just a couple of nights ago.
Well, thank you, James.
Richard Spencer, everybody. AlternativeRight.com. Bill Rowland, still with me here, co-hosting. I trust Bill is going to keep everything straight in the studio here in the second and third hours. Bill, you've got a tough job ahead of you tonight.
I thought you were having Keith on in the second hour. Is he coming?
No, he should be calling in, but I know you're the only one home in Memphis, so you're going to have to keep everything humming there at the studio, or else it's just going to be abandoned, and who knows what will happen. So,
I just don't like being alone in the studio. So as long as Keith is going to be joining me to keep me company, that'll be what I'm looking forward to.
Well, hopefully Keith will be calling in here at the second hour. We expect him to. So all of the Keith Alexander fans who are so used to him appearing in the first hour, Keith on a business trip this weekend, I'm on a cesspool-related trip, Bill Rowland doing what he does best, and that's co-hosting, but co-hosting from home. Bill, we got a couple of minutes left this hour. What should we talk about now?
Well,
do you want to talk about Rick Sanchez?
Rick Sanchez is so typical of the man who manages to get just enough courage up to make a fool of himself. And of course, I listened to the Rick Sanchez interview. And what amazes me is how circumspect he was. There's really no mention of Jews or of anything specifically anti-Semitic. But even being just circumspect, even just suggesting or implying something about who owns the media, got him fired. And, of course, very typical of his profession, he goes crawling back on hands and knees to try to apologize and salvage his career, which is over. It's over. And he'll be back on a Miami radio station speaking Spanish again if he wants to get a job. So, you know, he'd have been much better off holding his courage up and speaking out more, because the one thing that the media owners don't want is exposure. They don't want that light shining on them too closely, because if you just name names, if you just talk about Sumner Redstone, if you just talk about some of the others who actually own the media, who actually do control it, then they get a little embarrassed by their numbers and about their saturation of who controls who says what in America.
Well, Bill, you know, that's why it's always important for paleoconservatives or traditional Americans, as I like to call us, to withhold their judgment about just who is worthy of support. You really have to stand the test of time and with consistency and be battle-scarred, as we are and as a few others are, before I think people are really deserving of support. I mean, here was Rick Sanchez. On Friday, he says something that we can all agree with. You know, finally, here's a, I wouldn't say the well-known personality, but he has been on CNN. I mean, we might be more well-known than he, but nevertheless, he's someone in the industry speaking out. And so finally, yes, we've got someone that we can rally to and we can support. And then, you know, by Sunday, he's on hand and knees, begging for forgiveness for speaking the truth. He didn't say anything that was slightly controversial as far as I'm concerned, or as far as Jews are concerned. I mean, it's very well known. I wrote an article about it in the wake of this. It was republished at Kevin McDonald's excellent website, The Occidental Observer, but there have been many articles written about this that point out that in their own newspapers and in their own trade journals, Jews brag. They don't just mention it. They brag about the fact that they do own Hollywood. And it's just a proven fact. And you know, what's wrong with this, as Keith Alexander always so eloquently puts, what's the problem with Jews having so much power and influence? You know, you have this very, very small, almost insignificant portion of the population, less than 2% of the entire American population, but they control the entire media. Now, what's wrong with that, though? Well, what's wrong with it is that they're the most liberal. You know, they are by far the most liberal and anti-Christian and truly anti-white section of the American population, and if you really care about our interests and our institutions, then you have to take issue with the fact that this group of people has such a disproportionate amount of power. I mean, Bill, am I pretty much on target there? Is that really the gripe? It's not because it's owned by Jews. It's because of the message that is propagated by the Jews that happen to run these studios and these newspapers and these magazines.
Well, the fact is, James, let's say that the Mormons controlled the media, or the Muslims, or the Catholics, then almost certainly there would be questions and there would be doubts and there would be concerns over whether or not these people had an agenda when they delivered the news. But for some reason, people who are the Jews who do control the media are never questioned or are not allowed to be questioned about whatever motives or agenda they may have with this control, using this control of the media to push for their own best interests or perhaps just their own ideologies and beliefs. And so I think automatically when any time you hear of any industry, or especially that which can manipulate public opinion, being controlled by one group of people, ask yourself, what's the agenda? What do these people have in common that they may not have in common with ordinary Anglo-Saxon Protestant Americans? And I think those differences are manifest, and I think they're obvious. A number of years ago, a poll was taken of people in Hollywood, and fully 72% described themselves as liberal to very liberal. So, you know, you're talking about already 3/4 of the people in the entertainment industry and in the media describing themselves in a certain belief system and putting themselves in a certain category of ideology and of social consciousness. So, you know, we got to ask ourselves, what do these people believe that is different from what I believe, and how do they manipulate what they control to make other people believe as they do? This is the key question, and I think it's a perfectly legitimate question, considering the overwhelming number of Jews who are in that industry and who do have a hand in public opinion.
Now, I don't know how many white, I hate to say white conservative Christians, because so many conservative Christians are marching in lockstep with the Zionist agenda, but, you know, how many, you know, good remnants of the faith are in control of major media in Israel? And I can tell you it's 0%, as opposed to the 100%, near 100% of Jewish Zionist people in control of our institutions, be it the academia, media, even the churches. But, Bill, very excellent commentary, as always, precision, pinpoint precision and delivery, and I appreciate that. But the Rick Sanchez thing is just another, I tell you, you know, these folks, very few and far between will you find people who will stand in the glare of the spotlight and take these bullets and refuse to apologize. And those are the people you need to support. I think certainly we're among them, and we're going to continue to be among them for the next 6 years. Political Cesspool about to celebrate a birthday. Bill Rowland, thanks for hosting with me this hour. I'll be back in the second hour right after this, ladies and gentlemen. Stay tuned.
The squirrel went berserk in the first self-righteous church in that sleeping little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit and blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.